We start today, Daf Yud Aleph, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, at the Halakha Mishnah. So we're still into the issue of the inyan of the ketuvah of a betulah versus the ketuvah of an almanah. Gabi, are you sure you want your video on? You seem to be half asleep there. And the Mishnah wants to clarify the various stages there are, as we'll see. It's not a simple yes or no situation. Betula ubeula. So let's remember the issues that we need to take into consideration over here. I mean, there's obviously the question of the reality. Does this woman have a hymen or does she not? The question is, how meaningful is that particular issue in terms of the determination of betula or beula? In other words, if we said that back in Yevamos, we said that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a bogeret because she doesn't really have a functional hymen anymore, and therefore she's not considered to be a betula vis-a-vis a Kohen Gadol. Certainly, there's nobody who holds that a girl who's older than 12 and a half years old is not considered to be a betula, legabi the dinim of the ketuvah. Every ketuvah is written for a betula, even if she's 20 years old, 25 years old, despite the fact that we don't consider that to be the same thing as having a real protective hymen. So that's one layer in which we already saw the difference, la halacha, between a betula as defined to a Kohen Gadol and a betula as it's defined in terms of the ketuvah. We also have other issues. And that is a betula that is a mukat eitz. What would be the din over there? She does not have actual betulim, but the reason she doesn't have actual betulim is because of the fact that some accident penetrated her, or a broom handle penetrated her, what Americans love to call sodomizing. She therefore lost her betulim, but in an event that is a mechanical event and has nothing to do with the issue of her sexuality. Is that the same thing as being a non-betula because of the fact that there is no hymen there? Another question. Suppose this woman actually did have relations, but they weren't sexual relations. In what sense? The male was less than 9 years old. And remember, the way that we define the shiur of sexuality is from the age of 9. So you're saying, but I don't understand. I mean, all the mechanics are exactly the same. Yeah, that's the issue of mechanics. What does mechanics have to do with the question of sexuality? But, I mean, if the mechanics are indeed the same, so then wouldn't she be at least considered to be a mukat eitz if she had relations with a less than 9-year-old male? These and other questions that will be raised here, such as the state of a woman who went to the chuppah, but whose husband dropped dead under the chuppah. So now she's still considered to be a married woman in the sense of a nesua. Is this status of non-betula, is it more a question of the way that people look at it? Well, she was never married, but over here she was married. So the very fact that she was married, does that mean she's not a betula, even though she's physically a betula? So we go from one extreme to the other over here. We can have a woman that we consider to be a betula, even though she does not have any hymen. And we can have a woman who does have a hymen, who's considered to be the equivalent of a beula, because she was already married, so to speak, because she went under the chuppah. These are the extremes of the questions that we have to discuss, not only in terms of the extremes, but obviously in terms of the middles. So that's one very important issue that our daf is going to begin the involvement in. And the other issue is, we've discussed the question of how much the ketuvah should be written for. All of that, of course, is the assumption that we are writing the ketuvah being in full possession of the facts. Okay? But in all of the cases that we've been talking about at Ta'anat Betulim, obviously, we were not in possession of the facts. And the situation physically is different from what was assumed. So we talked yesterday about where it's easy to make a mistake and to think that the situation is different than you assume. Maybe the boy and girl were malnutrition, or maybe he didn't really have enough information about what exactly needs to be done or how to do it, or maybe it was mata, and so on and so forth. That's fine. But what about where someone fully expected a woman to be a betula, and she turns out not to be a betula, and in fact is actually a bula? Does she totally lose her ketuvah? Can he claim mekach ta'ut, and that I never would have married her if I had known she slept with somebody else? Now, let's continue on down the line. Suppose the reason that she is considered to be less than a full betula is because she did have relations, but she had relations with a child who was less than 9 years old. So if that causes some kind of distress to the husband, can he also taina a mekach ta'ut on that? Suppose the reason that she is not a betula is because she is physically, the betulim were removed because of an accident. So then is that considered to be a mekach ta'ut, or does that lessen the value of the ketuvah from 200 to 100, and so on? So we need to first examine what precisely we mean when we say a betulah. What are the circumstances in which a person has a right to assume that someone is a betulah? And then what if his expectations were disappointed? What, in fact, is the halacha in terms of either changes of value in the ketuvah or cancellation of the entire marriage on the basis of its being a mekach ta'ut? And therefore, obviously, there would be no betulah, no ketuvah at all. So let's begin our Mishnah with an interesting case, because what we're talking about over here is less than 3 years old, in which we can have a case of a giyoret less than 3 years old, which requires a little bit of explanation, because how can somebody be mitgayer at the age of less than 3 years old? So how would that happen? That incidentally involves us also in the mechanics of giur and what would be the expectations in giur and reliability of giur at that age, but also brings us face to face with the question of what is the status of a less than 3 year old's hymen. Now, remember that we said before that in fact, there is no way to destroy the betulim of less than 3 years old. And in the Gemara Nida, there's all kinds of question whether that means that they weren't fully formed or whether that they are formed and there might even be bleeding, but they would come back again. And then a question of what does come back again mean? Does it mean springing back into place, or does it actually mean a regrowth, or does it mean there are multiple pieces that could fall into place? This is something that becomes clearer in the Gemara in Nida, which we can get into discussion over there, but the Gemara raises the issue of itstudi matstid, or are they ati, they're nafik, and then they're ati, and what exactly that means, and what's considered to be dam of betulim in less than 3 years old. And in fact, if there were dam, would the dam be that? All of those things are machlokas. And Rashi in our sugya brings the simple meaning. Remember the mashal that we had is like sticking your finger in your eye, so that if there's tearing, then when you remove your finger from your eye, then it goes back to normal. There's one way of understanding that is, the way Rashi understands it, is that even though the eye gets very dry and irritated, if your finger's in your eye, new tears will come. Not that it was only a temporary situation, in which case he can stand by taking a simple reading of the Gemara that the Petulim simply regrow. But then, I mean, what does that mean? Instantaneous regrowth? So then how long do you need before you can assume that there were betulim? Well, the Gemara Nida says, I wish to say the betulim don't appear immediately, but it isn't clear whether that means, again, spring back into place, and that there's some possible damage that might be done, but the betulim would still be there. All of that we could talk about in Nida, because that's not what's really important to us. But what is important is that what's not considered to be a be'ula, if the child had relations before she was 3 years old. And this is even where we're talking about a child who was a shivcha, or a child who was a goya, or a child who was a shvuya, and she was in the hands of kidnapper. Now, over there, obviously, in all of those cases, we're going to assume that she had an awful lot of sexual activity, despite the fact that she was less than 3 years old, because that's standard behavior in those kind of circumstances. And afal pikein, the Mishnah is saying that if she's less than 3 years old, it doesn't matter how many times she was penetrated, because that's not really called penetration. So hagiyoret vashvuya vashivcha shenivdu v'shenitgayru v'shenishtacharu Putot mibnot shalosh shanim. So whether she was a Jewish woman who was captured and therefore was at the mercy of these bums that had captured her and probably was violated multiple times, or a gioret where the norm is in that society that she might have been violated multiple times because that's just the way the children are treated, or a shivcha, we're over there. In general, we know that the hanhaga of an eved with a shivcha is free sex at all age. Nonetheless, if we ended up marrying them because there was a giyur, or because there was managed to ransom them, or we actually had freed the shivcha, and they were less than 3 years old at the time, they are considered to be full-scale virgins. And that means that the betula, the din of the betula, is that they have 200 zuz, just like a normal betula, v'yesh lehem ta'anat betulim, and there's no problem at all. So in other words, we don't say that in a case of less than 3 years old, there is some loss of value because of the fact that this child was a sexual object or maybe for years before she was three, but the point is that right now she's just like anybody else. So that means that we take away the entire concept of sexuality at less than 3 years old. And because of that, all that counts is the fact that Be'etzem, right now, she's coming into her own as a woman. And whatever was done before with her was not as a woman. It was Portnoy's complaint. But we certainly don't worry about changing any kind of value in here. Okay, so now the question is, how indeed, once we're bringing up this thing about a giyoret, how indeed did she become a giyoret at the age of 2 years old? She was less than 3 years old. And if she did become a giyoret, is it a reliable giyor, or might it change with time when she grows up? Omer Avuna, ger katan matbilino to'al da'at beiti. So in the case of a katan who is mitgayer, the tefillah is done on the basis of the da'at of Beit Din. So the Beit Din becomes the equivalent of the Av to this katan, and therefore he, as a Beis Din, so to speak, can actually be Megayer. Now, there's a little bit of a question over here. Why did it leave out Mila? Because, I mean, tefillah is not going to be enough to make the ger katan. If we're talking about a male katan, it's not going to be enough to make him into a ger. So there's an awful lot of discussion about this, which is not very nogel halacha in many, many cases. And the question is it really considered to be a zochilo la'adam, where the child certainly does not want to go through any kind of operation of mila? So in what case, how exactly would you say that you can do it al dat beit din without the child's willingness on any level? So Enochinami, some learn that it's talking about over here that the Beis Din cannot do the Mila. It's talking about that Mila was done without the Das of Beis Din, and so now all that's left for the Beis Din is, in fact, the question of the Tefillah. There are others who say that maybe Enochinami, we will not do the Mila, and that later on when the Mila is done, that is the Gemara of the Geras, and so on. Okay, but this is not our sugya, but this is a very, very rich sugya halacha in terms of making a bracha on such a mila. How do you know he's not going to change his mind later on when he grows up, and then the whole thing will be a bracha levatola, all kinds of issues like that. But anyway, what is the chiddush? I mean, all that Ravuna is saying is that since it's a schusulo, so it certainly is a big schus to be a Ben Yisrael, and now he can have Eschelik in Elam Habak, or Yisrael Yeshlam Chelik by Elam Habba. So why wouldn't you be able to be Mezakeh him? And Zochin Ladam Shelo Befanav, is that the point? I mean, we know that. There's a Mishnah that says Beferish. Tanina, it says Zochin Ladam Shelo Befanav, even though a person hasn't made a Shliach, but this can be done without his even knowing about it, because it's as if he made a Shliach. The ein chavin la adam shelo befanav. You obviously cannot do something which is not advantageous to him and consider it to be with his das. It is not with his das. Now, of course, there's a number of very serious problems over here, because since the din of zechiah is through the idea of shlichut, well, first of all, katan can't make a shliach because he can't do the thing himself. So I can make a shliach to do the thing. So then I could best then do it. And then the other problem is that as a goy, the question is whether there is that din of shlichus to a goy or not. And if there isn't, so then in this case, how in the world would we be able to do an Alpi Besdin? Tosfos even has a suggestion, which is unbelievable, that the entire Geirut over here is in fact only a Drabanan Geirut, but not a D'oraisa Geirut, which of course leads to all kinds of questions. How can there be a Drabanan Geirut? I mean, is his Kedushin going to be Kedushin? And we treat him like a Jew the whole time. And how is that possible to do? Mirabana, we're allowing him to do things which are usher to do. People to sleep with him, which is usher to do. If he isn't really Midiraisi, he isn't really a Jew, and so on. And Tosfos says, well, you'd have to say it's going like the Mandi Omar, that Yishkoach b'dei Chachomim lakor dover min haTorah. This is, as you can see, is not as simple as it greets the eye. I mean, the obvious question is, if all of that is true, how could the Gemara possibly have said, well, Pshita, what's the Chiddush? We know. What are you talking about? We don't know anything. Every last bit of this is an immense Chiddush. No, I mean, how would we ignore all of that and ask the question of, you know, Micah Mashmalan? You got to be kidding. There's like five books to be written on Micah Mashmalan Ravuna. So whatever Pshat you're going to say is going to have to take that into consideration. Anyway, so based on the fact that this is just the din in the Zechiah, so what would be the Zechiah, the Chiddush in that, since we know from Gitmet, Zachin Adam Shalom Bafana? So what is the point of Ravuna? I'll tell you. Because I might have thought that Maudetema, Oved Kol Chavim, Befkera Nechalei. Look, it's all very nice to say you get Olam Haba and so on and so forth. And how many people give up their Olam Haba in order to lead a life of free sex? I'd rather have my freedom and have fun than have Olam Haba. So what are you tiny? So if this person is a goy, so you're going to take for granted that, well, he'd love to be a Jew. Yeah, sure. He'd love to be a Jew and cut out half of his fun or 90% of his fun. Get out of here. And that's certainly the halacha lemaisa in the case of an eved. If you want to be meshachrer an eved in a way in which it would be zochen l'adam shlo b'fanav, we paskin that the eved would rather remain an eved. Because as an eved, he has all of his sex whenever he wants it. He's got all of these shvachot that are always available to him, and he'd rather have cheap, available relations than to have to be a free man. And I said, but now he can marry a Jewish woman. And how many people want to marry Jewish women? Why is everybody running around finding non-Jewish women to marry? So in Achiyami, that's the way we paskin. So then why indeed would it even be true? So what, how can Ravuna say this? Oh, that's the big chiddush of Ravuna. Ravuna is saying that, look, all of those cheshbonas are only true for already an adult. So an adult knows about what he's going to be giving up. And therefore, Tom de Yisura, he has already had all of this fun, and he loves being promiscuous, and therefore he doesn't want to lose that. Masha Enkein, the Katan, you can still talk to him intelligently about Olam Haba, and he doesn't realize that he's giving up anything. It all sounds very good. So therefore, in this case, Taina Zervuna, you can even be without any need for someone to be appointing it, their best and can go ahead and can do it. A cotton is purely a schus, but you can understand that. Certainly, if you're going to start taking a knife to him, now that he might not consider to be a schus. I understand. Olam Haba or no Olam Haba. And therefore, it could be, though, she does that say that ain't a chinami. The mila isn't done by the best and without his das. Anyway, now, why are we bringing all of this up over here, Ravuna? Because it's very nogia, our Mishnah. The Mishnah was talking about a little girl who became a gioret at the tender age of two. So it says that she could be a gioret. So in which case, lema misayayale. The Mishnah over here calls her a gioret. So over here, she was obviously still a kitana, and it says that she became a gioret. How did she become a gioret? I'm assuming that my love, that belino adat beitin, that the Besdin did that, which is based on Ravuna. I don't understand. What makes you think that? Why can't it be talking about a family that was Megayer? So the father brought his entire family, including the little children, brought them to Besdin to be Midgayer, And therefore, we have a giyaret. One of the kids was less than 3 years old. What's the big deal? And over there, we can assume that it's not a problem if he was begayer his children, because there ain't a chinami, even though maybe he doesn't have the kayach because he's still a goy. But we can assume that there even a katan wants to stick with the family. So the nechlu b'mayda aved avon. So since they would rather be with their family, even though there may be other things that they would have enjoyed more, but children usually will stick with the family. Fine. Okay. Big questions about whether this is dafka father. Why does it say a father? And why don't we say that a child would love to stick with a mother at all and only mention the father? Why doesn't it apply to a mother? And it seems pretty clear from the Lashon of the Rishonim and even the Lashon of the Halacha that there is such a thing. So, I mean, the other approach is basically the way it's mashma from Rashi, but not here, is that the goy who wants to become a Jew is similar to the situation of Avram Avinu, who brings his family along. So in other words, by definition of the concept of the Geirut, we have the Bat Nadiv, the Tchila, the Bita Shel Avram Avinu was the Tchila of those who were mitnadev to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so then that means that a goy has the right to become Jewish, not only himself, but to bring his family into the same thing that Avram Avinu did, in which case the entire Mila Dafka was given to Avram Avinu B'Dafka to be able to have his family to be part, and the Manashe Yitzaved, Banav, Beto, Acharav. So that is the definition of being a goy, being in that status that now you have the rights to go ahead and to create a Geiris. And that would be a completely different way of viewing the whole sugya. Omer of Yosef, Higdilu, you should know that in all of these cases where we made them Geirim as Ketanim, they can now say that they're not interested. Now that they grow up, they say, who gave you the right to make me Jewish without asking me? I was just a kid, and I went along with whatever you guys were doing, but I don't want to be Jewish. So Enochinami, says Rav Yosef, we don't coerce people to remain Jewish, and we don't view them as now being Jews who are going back, and now they want to throw away mitzvahs, in which case Besdin wouldn't allow that, and they would be punished. No. They have a right to do that, and nobody's going to object. So yecholim limchot. Eitve Abaye, says Abaye, but now I have a problem with that also from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hagiyoret vashvuya vashivcha sheniftu vishnitgayru vishnishtachru p'chutot mibnot shalosh shanim v'yom echad. They get a ktuva of 200. Same thing as a regular betula. If what Rabbi Yosef said is true, it makes no sense. What happens if they get divorced? Well, we're going to give them money so that they can go and bring this money to church and have it as goyim. They're going to take your husband's money, and now she's going to be a non-Jew with that money, because after all, she could change her mind and say, I decided I don't want to be Jewish anymore. So how would we give her a ksuvah? Yavina la ktuvah da'azla va'achla b'gayuta. Understand, we want to give her money that then we're giving her good Jewish money, which is given to her only as a takana of the Torah, the Rabbanan, who care about her and are trying to make her life more secure. And that's the money we're going to give her for her to go to a bar and drink it all down, or go to a church and give it to charity to build a new cross in the church. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So apparently she cannot be. Says the Gemara, well, maybe we would only give it to her if she becomes a gedola. So we keep it in Besdin. We don't give it to her to actually spend. Well, I understand. You said that she can change her mind. So even if she became a gedola, can't she change her mind? No, of course not, says the Gemara, because it's not that she can change her mind at any point. It's that she can change her mind when she becomes a gedola. And at that point, she can decide, do I want to be Jewish or not? But once she decides that she wants to be Jewish, and she continues acting as a Jewess, she can't change her mind again. And at that point, the Geirut is absolutely binding. And therefore, the Besdin can hold on to her ketuvah and give her the ketuvah when she's finally completely reliable, and she's not going to go be spending it in the church. So kivan shigdila sha'a achad velo michata, shuv eina yechola limchot. Motiv Rava. Now, I have a problem, says Rava, with this idea from somewhere else. You're asking it from Ketuvah. I want to ask it to you from the fact that we have the same idea when it comes to the dinim of a knas. So the knas, in case someone was raped. So it says there, elu na'arot sheyesh lehem knas, habal ha'mamzeret, al ha'netina, al ha'kutit, who were the same thing as what we have over here. Or on a giyoret, shvuya, or shifcha, shenivdu v'shenitgayru v'shenishtachru p'chutot b'mnot shalosh shanim v'yom echad, yesh lehem knas. Why? Because since they were less than 3 years old, so that doesn't matter, because now they are considered to be a nara betula, right? And it includes the case of the giyoret. So now, if you're going to tell me that they could always change their mind and decide, I want to be a goya, so then why would we give them a knas? We're going to give them a knas so that they should go out and give it to the church? Well, it says the Gemara, the same thing. We will keep the knas in Besdin and give it to her when she becomes of age. But I thought you said she can change her mind. L'chi gadla nami memachi v'nafka. And here too we answer, kivan she'gdila sha'achat v'lo michata, shuv ena yechola limchot. So that means we basically have the same sugya in two different cases. So we have one sugya in which we ask it from ksuvis, which is Abaya's approach, and we have Rava's approach, where we ask exactly the same question and give exactly the same answers of the same case of a giyoret from the fact that she has a knas. Now, is there a difference? Why did one ask from ksuvas and one ask from the din of knas? Well, Abaye did not want to say, like Rava said, and that the question is a knas. Because you can't ask why we would give someone a knas, for heaven's sake. What are you suggesting? That, well, I mean, if this girl is going to go spend the money in church, so then the rapist shouldn't pay her. Oh, yeah, right. So we're going to give the rapist a chote. We're going to say, well, you know, I mean, you wouldn't want to give money to the church, would you? So why don't you just keep the money? That's crazy. That's called chote niskar. What's it? Because we have a svara. So therefore, we're going to get him off the hook. We got a way to get you off the hook. You shouldn't have to pay for rape. No. I don't think that's a reasonable question. Let him pay. And if she uses it in the church, that's not his problem. She's got to pay. Why do we care? Masha Enkein, Rava didn't want to ask a biased question from our Mishnah in Ketuvot, because he says you can't ask why somebody should pay a Ketuvah. Remember that the point of a Ketuvah, Einu taima shalotei kala beinav lo tziyah. The point of a ketuvah is to assure a safe relationship for a woman, and that the relationship shouldn't be casual. Now, the fact that ultimately there's the possibility of her going back on her Judaism, so because of that, she shouldn't have secure relationships, that doesn't make any sense. There's no difference. As long as she's currently Jewish, and maybe something will change, that does not make sense to say, why are we giving her a safe marriage? I mean, does that really sound reasonable to you? So therefore, each one views the other one's question as being basically irrelevant. And that brings us to Sir Richard, who seems to be strangely frozen this morning. You're on. You're also muted. Well, it sounds great, except that there's no sound. So even though you're not muted, you have to select your microphone there. Something, you're doing something wrong. So maybe go into your preferences, try out, unless I'm the one who's not hearing. Did everybody hear Richie? You did hear Richie. So I'm not hearing. Okay. So let me see what my problem is. See that? We always blame the other guy. What a disaster. I apologize, Sir Richard. Classic, though, isn't it? This human assumption, right? Wait, it ain't my problem. The rest of the world is crazy. It's a good thing the rest of you are there to let me know. Okay. So the Mishnah is giving us now other issues. And this was the question. So first we've decided, on a period of life in a girl's life in which basically there's no such thing as sex. And it doesn't matter what. In other words, we don't consider her to be worth less because of the fact, I understand that she still is a bit too loving, but there were reasons which we said that a woman may get a non-betulas ktuva, even though she's a betula, because we talked about a woman who went to a chuppah. She's called a married woman. And even though she is really a betula, her husband dropped dead before they ever got an opportunity to sleep together, she's still considered to be a married woman, and she's not a betula. Here we have the opposite extreme. So this is a woman who, as a child, was really a sex object for years, and she's not considered to have any connection to sex with anybody else. Okay, so that's the first area we've understood that. Now let's talk about the opposite case, where you can have a gadol. Now, a gadol does not mean an adult. A gadol means a child over the age of 9. So remember that when it comes to a male, the age that we call sexual competence is 9, not 3. And the question is that the same? Because, again, when we're taking into consideration the ketana, we're taking into consideration mechanical differences, right? Because over there we're saying that the fact is what confirms our sense that there's no sexual activity under the age of 3 is the fact that she will not lose her betulim, right? But now when we're talking about a male and we're giving an age of a male, I mean, I understand that you don't want to give that child genitals, so to speak. So, okay, so we said, so he doesn't have a penis. He has a broom handle. But the problem is that broom handles also damage betulim, don't they? And isn't that what's called a mukat eitz? So what is the status of a child less than 9, a male, when it comes to these dinim? Does he have no impact because you've defined him the same way you defined the female under 3? Or over here, there's still the mechanical impact to take into consideration. Or, in fact, is this shear a shear that has some implications vis-a-vis the mechanical impact? Now, this turns out to be a big machlokas, but I don't understand this sugya. So the Mishnah begins with the case of the opposite case in the original Mishnah. In this case, you have a boy over 9, which is called a gadol, who is ba al haketana, and when we say al haketana, we mean less than 3. We don't mean gadol and ketana in the normal sense. Or a katan, a less than 9-year-old, who was sleeping with a 3-year-old plus, and or appears to be a separate case, a mukat eitz, a woman who does not have betulim, but it's only because of the fact that she had an accident or was penetrated by a broomstick. So now this really puts the two cases side by side. The din is that in all of the above cases, Rebbe Meir says, look, the ketuvah is a normal ketuvah of a betula, because the way that we're defining all of these things, even if you're telling me that but she's not physically a betula in all of these cases, makes absolutely no difference. The point is, even if she's a mukas eitz and has no betulim, it's still 200. V'chachomim omrim, mukat eitz ktuvata mana. No, the mukat eitz ktuva is actually only 100. Bitula, almana, grusha, v'chalutza min hanisuina. Let's take the cases that we had in the first Mishnah, in which we have a bitula. In this case, we have an almana, but she's still a bitula. This is weird. How is that? Her husband dropped dead. Or he gave her a divorce on the spot, and they never ended up consummating the marriage. So they went to the chuppah, and she's technically called married. Amazingly, the halacha is that the ketuvah is only 1 mana. And because of that, ein lehem tana betulim. He cannot taina, well, I thought she was a betula, and so on and so forth. We are never going to actually be talking about a taina's besulim on someone who already only has a betula, only has a ketuvah of a mana. What about the opposite case of the giorit, the shvuya, and the shivcha? We do that too. Above the age of 3 years, then Ketuvatan is mana, and because of the fact that it is known that she's not a betula, ein lehem ta'anat betulin. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rab. This is all very nice that we consider the boy under 9 not to be the same as having slept with her, but still he does turn her into a mukat eitz. So basically, again, the question is, by the very virtue of her having been penetrated, she's a mukas eitz? Or does he mean where he actually damaged her besulin, she's a mukas eitz? So we'll talk about this in a moment. Whereas Shmuel, however, says Reb Yehuda, when I came to Shmuel, remember that Reb Yehuda originally learned with Rav, and then after Rav was nifter, he went to learn with Shmuel, and very often he would say over the limudim from Rav to Shmuel, and Shmuel would disagree. And in this case as well, ki amrita kamei de Shmuel, when I said over what Rav says, look, it's all very nice to say that a less than 9-year-old penis is a broomstick, but broomsticks also create mukas eitz. Shmuel said to me, that's not true. Broomsticks make a mukat eitz. Humans don't make a mukat eitz. You don't call a buser of an adam, you don't call human organs a broomstick. And therefore, there is no mukat eitz from basar. So now again, there's a big machlokas rishonim about how to understand this. The Tosfos says over here that we're talking about where, in fact, he did not destroy the betulim. So the question over here is there a problem of simple penetration that causes the value to go down? So in other words, if you learn, this was the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim, do we say that a mukat eitz is ktuvatamatayim? Or do we say that, well, no, there's this physical reality of the fact that she has no betulim. Now, remember, it's not all the same, as we explained. Let's say that she's a bogeret. So over there, her betulim have gradually weakened as she got older and older, to the point where they're no longer serving any real purpose, and they don't create any kind of real barrier for her. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, she doesn't have any betulim. If she's over 12 and a half, then we have the fact that she literally was penetrated with something like a broom handle that removed her betulim. Then we have the question of she was penetrated by a human penis that is not considered technically to be different than a broom handle. Now, those things are not necessarily the same because there may be an element of not feeling happy. This is called chen. Often in the Gemara, Yerushalmi refers to it as chen. A woman loses her chen because of certain events. So, for instance, we had in the case in the Mishnah where the woman is technically considered to be married despite the fact that they never consummated the marriage. There's two different ways of understanding that. According to the Pashtus of the Sugya here and the Rishonim here, the issue is that we don't really believe that it was never consummated. So even the guy is told that, well, she was a married woman, but she never actually consummated. Yeah, right. You know, they always say that in order to get somebody to marry her. Okay, that's one approach. The other approach is, even if we know 100% that this is true, the fact is that, as the Yerushalmi puts it, she has lost her chen. So that you don't have that same chavivas. Everybody is saying you bought a used car. So you're telling me, oh, come on, it wasn't really a used car. I got it from Hertz and it was still wrapped. And what's the bottom line? Your insurance policy is a used car insurance policy. Why is that? Because the value has gone down because it had a previous owner, period. So you'll say, but that's crazy. Well, so how come, if it's crazy, how come people are not rushing to Hertz in order to buy the new car? They're not rushing to Hertz because they want a new car. They don't want a new car. Of course, that's not the only reason. The reason is if they try selling it, it's going to be worth less if they bought it as a one-owned already car. But you get the idea. So the question over here is there simply a loss of chen? Or is there a real sense that I don't really believe that it was never used? there's always the old Matilda idea of taking the speedometer and putting the speed drill going backwards. Or at least it used to be that way. Okay. And then we have the other question over here. Is the very fact that this woman, you're telling me, come on, I mean, she didn't have sex. It was a little kid. I understand, but I mean, it's not quite the same as a woman who never had relationships with a man. You're saying, so she only had relationships with a little kid. I mean, do you feel like perfectly at ease with that? Or does it like make you feel that she's sort of not exactly a betula? So, I mean, these are all different issues. So therefore, there's two very different ways of learning the Gemara. The way Tosus understands the Gemara, what we're saying is that there's a difference between a mukas eitz, which is rough and inappropriate penetration with a broom handle. I mean, that's fine. That's a mukas eitz. And that Shmuel is saying that if, in fact, there was no removal of the betulim, then just the fact that she had relations with the child is not enough to make her the equivalent of a mukas eitz. But it doesn't mean literally mukas eitz, because we're not talking about whether betulim were removed. So we're using, in that version, in Tosis's version, we're using the word mukas eitz as an example of a reduction in value because of something that did not involve an actual relationship, right? But the other way of learning it is that according to Shmuel, literally, ein mukat eitz bibasar, meaning, if our problem is a non-penis penis, in other words, less than 9 years old, there's a reason for that. It's because there's such a penis is not large enough, is not hard enough to actually totally remove betulim, and therefore maybe there could be some damage to betulim, or others, and maybe in the event that actually there was bleeding and so on. So, okay, obviously each case is different. It's not meant to give a complete blanket statement. Again, these are different gradations in how to understand what Shmuel is saying. But Shmuel is saying that even if there were some kind of damage to betulim, it's not the same when a child is so young and small. Okay, it's a different approach. So, in other words, ein mukat eitz bebasar may mean physically, or it may mean there's no equivalency to mukat eitz for a basar adam. And some, instead of the whole story that Reb Yudah says, oh, first I was taught this by Rav, and then I went to Shmuel. Instead of the story, it's direct machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Katan habal agedola. Rav said, she's a mukat eitz, and Shmuel says, ein mukat eitz bebasar, there's no such thing. So now the question is, how does this fit into our Mishnah? And this turns out is going to open up the whole issue of the Mishnah. Mosiv Rav Hoshaya. It says, a gadol shebala ktana, which, okay, that I understand. The katana bala gdola, which means a less than 9 year old, slept with a plus 3 years old. And a mukas eitz. Now that means there's three different cases here, right? The second case of the 8 year old, and the third case of a mukat eitz are not equivalent cases. There's three cases in the Mishnah, and it's a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim only in case number three, in the case of the mukat eitz. Okay? So that means that when the Rabbi Meir says k'tuvatam matayim, and the Chachamim say the words mukat eitz k'tuvatam mana, so then that means that the case of the child is clearly not the equivalent of a mukat eitz. It's a different case. We don't argue with you about the child who's less than nine, but we do argue with you about the issue only about the literal mukat eitz. So how does Rav going to learn that Mishnah? Rav will have to learn it like this. Okay, come on. Gadola ba'ala ketana. Let's take the first case. First case is the child, the female is less than 3 years old, then nothing happened at all. It's completely ignored. And it's lo klum. Now, let's take the next case. Well, and the reason for that is why? Because we said in the Mishnah Ksuvas, less than 3 years old is sticking your finger in your eye. Nobody changes the Ksuva because somebody stuck a finger in the eye. So to speak. In other words, for all intents and purposes, nothing happened. A second case. Katan habal agdola. Here's the way to understand the Mishnah. Katan habal agdola mukat eitz. Not a third case. That is a mukat eitz. And, okay, and therefore, what does that mean? Oh, what it means is a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan. That's why we focus on mukateitz, but it's not a separate case. Omer Rami Bar Chama. Let me also point out something else. I mean, when you're talking about how much is the ketubah, does that mean that you know that she's a mukateitz? Or does it mean that you didn't even know she's a mukateitz? Because, I mean, do you have a right to say, I never thought that I was marrying a girl without a hymen? For heaven's sakes, I don't want a girl like that. Okay, is that possible to say? Is it a mekach ta'ut? Says Rami Bar Chama, yes. The machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is only where he knew, not that he was fooled or fooled himself. And that's because the question is, what is the appropriate ketuvah to write her? So Rabbi Meir says, look, what do I care if she has a hymen, for God's sake? Somebody's business. And if she was over 12 and a half, so she doesn't have a hymen, someone would say, I'm sorry, I only pay 100 for a ksuvah of a boger. Drop dead. She'll find another husband. That's not even a kosher ksuvah. So you're going to say, how come she gets a full ksuvah? So Rabbi Meir says the same thing is true over here. What's the difference, for heaven's sakes, between a bicycle accident and growing up? That's the worst accident, is growing up. Verabbanan. So she's basically saying, according to Rabbi Meir, she's the same as a girl who grew up, Madame Lila Bogaret. Whereas the Rabbanan say, no, she's similar to a Be'ula, and then she only gets one mana. We're going to speak about why in a moment. But certainly, says Rami Bar Chama, if the guy didn't know, and he's saying, well, I never would have married her if I had known, so then everybody would agree that she doesn't get a ketuvah at all, because he was assuming, and why would nobody told him otherwise, he was assuming that he was getting a completely uninjured, totally natural little girl wrapped in plastic straight from the manufacturer. And therefore, he could tell you, I never would have married a girl like this. The box was open. And therefore, Dimrako, lo klum. Now, first of all, what's the logic here? Rabbi Meir, why is Rabbi Meir saying she's the same as a bogeret? I mean, why not say that she's the same as a be'ula because she lost her betulin? No, obviously, a be'ula, a human, had actually penetrated her. So that lowers her value. Be'ula David be'ma'aseh bidei adam. Masha Inkin, in this case, the fact that she was penetrated by a broom handle, that does not lower her value. Lo yidavi b'maisa b'dei adam. And what about the other way around? Why did Rabbanan compare her to a be'ula? Isn't it more like a bogeret? No. A bogeret, nothing changed. Nature took its course. She grew up and she became a non-hymen betula. So she's still wrapped in plastic. The only thing is that the plastic doesn't do much anymore. But the problem of the other case is that she's not wrapped in plastic. And basically someone tore the plastic off. What do I care whether it was done with a broom handle? The point is she's no longer wrapped in plastic. So these are two completely different ways of viewing the element of the chashivas of the betulim. And that's the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. But, Rami Bar Chama says, if he didn't even know about it, everybody agrees, now that is a mistake. And he could say, I never wanted to marry her on that basis. And therefore, he does not pay a ketuvah at all. Masi v'Rav Nachman, now that makes absolutely no sense what you're saying, because we're going to see a little bit later that the arguments of a Tainas Besulim, where the woman says, hey, now listen, I was a Mukas Eitz. And he says, I don't believe it. I believe that some man penetrated you. So Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer says, we believe her that she was a mukaseitz. Now, if she's saying that, isn't she saying, and therefore I get a ketuvah? Whereas he's saying, no, I don't believe you. You do not get a ketuvah. So what are you telling me? Rami Bar Chama says, well, I mean, if he didn't know, she doesn't get a ketuvah. I mean, so then what's the point of her saying, stop accusing me of sleeping with the guy I'm a mukas eitz, and you have no right to deprive me of my ketuvah? So how can you say such a thing in light of that Mishnah? Rami Bar Chama makes no sense. Ela Amar Rava, okay, for sure. I would say that whether he knew she was a mukas eitz or he didn't, they have machlokas exactly the same. According to Rabbi Meir Matayim, according to the Rabbanan, there I'm ready to say that according to the Rabbanan, if ikirba, so then she gets a mana, but if lo ikirba, she doesn't get anything at all. And therefore, what we're going to have to say over here is that the machlokas between her and her husband was going like Rabbi Meir. And according to Rabbi Meir, she is saying, I'm a mukat eitz and I get 200. And he is saying, you're a mukat eitz and you are a actual ba'ula, and therefore you don't get the 200. But in the end, Rava had to admit that that was wrong, and that the Rabbanan hold that, in fact, she is not considered to be a mekach ta'ut who gets nothing. Nobody holds you get nothing. And I'll prove it to you. D'tanya, in the Braita, it says, how exactly does Shemra, Motzi Shemra, work? Well, the chosin comes into the Bezdin, and he says to the girl's father, Ploni, hey, Mr. Ploni, lo matzati lebitcha betuli. That's the lashon in the pasuk. Okay, and what's the din? So if there are witnesses that she was mizana, so then she only gets a ksuva of a mana. What are you talking about? If there's edim that she was mizana, she's dead meat. What kind of ksuva? The din is over there that she's chayav skila. No, sorry. Im yesh edim shezinta tachtav. Obviously, that's beskila. But im yesh edim shezinta means that she had been mizana before they were ever married, before the erusin. Then she gets a ksuva of a mana. Now, Rabbi Chiya bar Ovin said, in the name of Rabbi Sheshes, that that proves that if somebody marries a woman thinking she's a bitula, and it turns out that she's a bu'ula, that she still gets the ksuva of a mana, because how else do you understand the braita? It says that that's how we corrected it. If the Edom say that she was mizana before, then she still gets a mana. Umasiv Reb Nachman. Now, this is all part of the discussion. Remember, we've popped into a space where we're trying to prove that Rava changed his mind. So in order to prove that Rava changed his mind, we're going through this entire story to get to the point where Rava responds. Okay, so now we had Reb Chiya bar Ovin saying that according to Reb Sheshes, a woman who was not a betula, but was rather a be'ula because she had relations with someone, but had not done it be'isser, is actually going to still get a mana. So Rav Nachman asked on this from the Mishnah. Hanoseh teishav lo matzala betulim. And she tainas that, well, it's true, I didn't have betulim, but I was raped. And I was raped after you had already given me kedushin. And therefore, this is your bad luck. Nistachafa sadeu. It's his field that got flooded. Remember, the kicha kicha miste Ephron. The relationship to kinyan of an isha is to the kinyan of a soda. And in the case where once you had bought the soda, it gets flooded, then obviously that's your bad luck. That's not a reason to say I never would have bought the field. So the same thing is true over here. It's too bad for you. And he says, I don't believe it. I say that you were raped before we ever got married. And I never would have taken in marriage a rape victim. And therefore, she doesn't get anything. Now, why wouldn't she get anything? According to Reb Chiya bar Ovin, you pay a mana. So isn't this a beferish in Mishnah that says not like Reb Chiya bar Ovin? Now, Omar lo Reb Chiya, continuing the story, so Reb Chiya bar Ovin said to Reb Nachman, the people that were asking, you know, I love the way you're so smart. You discovered the Mishnah. Nobody before you ever knew this Mishnah. I don't know the Mishnah. The Chachamim don't know the Mishnah. I can tell you that when Reb Sheshes said his psak, but you see from here that you do get a mana, you know who was standing there in the middle of this discussion? Rav Amram was there. All of the Gedolei Hador were sitting there at the time that Reb Sheshes made his diak, and he said, you see from here that if there are Edim that she was in fact a Be'ula, she still gets a mana. And they all came up with the same question that brilliant you came up with. Okay, everybody understood this question. And they ask this question from the Mishnah, where the Mishnah is saying clearly that it means over here that there's a mekach ta'ut, which means you get nothing, and you claim there's no mekach ta'ut. And Rav Sheshes answered them, and they accepted the answer. He said, my mekach ta'ut, nami, when it says it's a mekach ta'ut, it doesn't mean that the whole wedding is canceled. It means the fact that I wrote a ktuva for Matayim, that was a mekach ta'ut. It should only have been a mana. And that's what it means, that it's a mekach ta'ut mi Matayim, but you still get a mana. So you are coming along and saying, despite the fact that everybody already discussed this, as if now you've discovered America, and the Mishnah is saying she doesn't get anything. And Rava, now here's the point. Rava says, now, wait a minute. It's a very good question. I mean, I don't care about the fact that everybody was standing there. What kind of answer is that? The meaning of the word mekach ta'ut means that the actual kinyan was a ta'ut, not the figure that I put in the ketuvah was a ta'ut. So the very fact that it says mekach ta'ut, mandako motiv, whoever asked this question against Rav Sheshes, it is a very good question. And that's because mekach ta'ut means the whole mekach is a ta'ut legamre. And therefore she should lose her whole ketuvah, and Rav Chiya Bar Avin is wrong. But wait, they ask on Rava. So then what do you do about the Braita? The Braita said that if it was before the Erisin, she does get a ksuva b'mana. And Rava, and this is Rava himself saying, well, then we're going to have to understand the Braita differently. Before, what we did was, is we added the fact that, even though it says that if there are Edim, we added, if there were Edim that she was Mizana before she was Mu'reset, right? Then she gets a mana. Maybe that wasn't the right way to answer the Braita. Maybe the right way to answer the Braita was like this. Im yesh edim shezinta taktav biskila. If she was into mikara, she gets nothing. And then instead of throwing in the words, if the edim say she was mizana before the erison, throw in the words, but if she's found to be a mukat eitz, and that's the reason she's missing betulim, then her ketuvah is a mana. Now, obviously, if that's saying it, according to Rabbi Meir, she's supposed to get matayim. And if Rava is saying she's getting mana, that means that Rava is saying, according to the Rabbanan, she gets a mana. And what we just said before, that Rava says that no, according to the Rabbanan, you would get nothing, he obviously changed his mind. And now he's ready to say that even Alibin Rabbanan, you are not going to lose everything. You'll only go from 2 to 1.